In times like these, we need the armor of God for the well-being of our families, to help you stand in the evil day. The Church of God International presents Armor of God, a program of biblical understanding. And now your host, Bill Watson.
Well, friends, again, welcome to another international telecast of the Armor of God, and it's good to be with you once more. My name is Bill Watson, and I'll be hosting the remaining portion of this program today. You know, it amazes me here in the West, a highly developed, highly educated society that we live in, how sometimes we may act and sometimes rationalize so, well, silly. And if I might even use the word sometimes, so stupid. I mean, many of you are well aware of the fact here of what you could say a little while ago with former President Clinton. Many people have gotten a lot of mileage out of the fact of when he was being interrogated there during the impeachment hearings about the time when he was using the word is. And a lot of people, as I say, have gotten a lot of mileage out of it. David Letterman, you know, Jay Leno on The Tonight Show and all. They've, you know, made jokes about the fact of, well, you know, how can somebody get confused on the word is? And yet the president of the United States, former president, that is, I should say, has mentioned and attempted to try to persuade us, the listening public, that, well, there is times when is doesn't mean is. You know, and you wonder, and you scratch your head, and you say, sometimes, you know, how does this rationalize? How does this make sense? Where do people go with these things? As I say before, that, you know, from time to time, I feel my intelligence, frankly, gets insulted from time to time. I mean, here on the other hand as well, you have another situation. You have the religious right on one side of the fence stating that, well, you know, we should be hanging the Ten Commandments in our schools. Well, I've got no problem with that. As a matter of fact, I don't have any agreement or disagreement, I should say, with that. As a matter of fact, I've said, and you've heard me say from time to time, that if it were left up to me, perhaps what we ought to do is not only hang them on our walls, but we ought to maybe have the children stand up and recite them every morning, just to kind of ingrain these moral and social codes into their minds and their hearts. But that's beside the point. The fact that I want to mention here, and the point that I'd like to make very simply, is here you have the religious right, and they're pushing, and they're making issues, and they're trying to initiate legislation to get the Ten Commandments approved to be hung on the wall in our schools, but yet these same folks will tell you in church on every Sunday or in Sunday school that the law has been nailed to the cross, that Jesus Christ did away with the law, that the law, the Old Testament, is really not all that relevant. What's really relevant today is this dispensation of faith, you know, this age of grace. And frankly, only the New Testament is really what matters. And so hence, the fact remains is that, well, you know, the law doesn't really need to be obeyed. Well, then, you know, I'm kind of suffering from whiplash here a little bit, because on the one hand, they're saying, well, we need to hang them in our schools. And yet on the other hand, at church, they say, well, we don't really need to teach them because they've been done away with. So, you know, which is it? I mean, if they've been done away with, why are we making issues about hanging them on the walls in our schools? Now, you may say, well, Bill, what are you so, you know, involved with these issues for and so on? Well, I'll tell you, my friends, there's another issue occurring right now as I speak, an initiative right now being pushed through on Capitol Hill to amend, that's right, to amend the Constitution of the United States. Now, I don't know how many of you are aware of this or not, but there is an amendment. And are you ready for this? Are you ready? Here it is. There is a marriage amendment. That's right, a marriage amendment that is being right now pushed through Capitol Hill in an attempt to go ahead and get this attached to the Constitution. And you may say, well, Bill, what's a marriage amendment? Well, simply, very matter-of-factly, it's an amendment that is essentially purposed for the reason of clarifying what marriage is. And you may say, like I said when I first read about this, you know, a marriage amendment to clarify what marriage is? Why, what in the world do we need a marriage amendment for on the Constitution, attached to the Constitution of the United States, to define marriage of all things? I mean, that sounds a little bit, frankly, absurd, doesn't it? Ridiculous. I mean, a little foolish, and again, may I use the word stupid? And you know what? I couldn't agree with you more. But again, hear me out on this, because before you go ahead and make any judgments about the seriousness or the usefulness or the necessity of this particular amendment, hear me out, because I think you'll begin to understand why there is a certain level of importance concerning this particular amendment coming down the line once you hear the language of what the amendment is. But before I go ahead and quote you what the amendment is all about, I want to introduce to you our free offer today. That's right. It's a free offer as a free educational service to you. We're not asking anyone for any kind of money. Telemarketers are not going to be calling you for any money. All you need to do is dial 888-578-8791 or locally 903-939-2929. Ask for the tape, Cherish Your Families. That's right, Cherish Your Families. It was given before a live audience about 1 hour long, along with the booklet that goes through an awful lot of details concerning the Christian principles of parenting. That's right, Christian principles of parenting. And it's a very good book. It goes through a lot of details in regards to how to bring our children up and how to act with them and how to interact with them. Because, my friends, today our children need some very good education in respect to about what is right and what is wrong, because frankly, people are confused today. They're confused about a lot of things, and of all things, it appears as though the American people are confused on a simple thing, as you would think, as marriage, but confused on what the definition of marriage is really all about. Now, let me read you what this amendment is, and I think you'll begin to see where I'm going with this once you begin to understand the language of what this amendment is all about. Here I go now. I'm going to quote this. Marriage, and I'm quoting now. Quote, marriage is in the U.S. shall consist only of the union of a man and woman. You with me? Here we go. I'm going to further quote. Neither this Constitution or the Constitution of any other state, nor state or federal law, shall be construed to require that marital status or the legal incidences thereof be conferred upon unmarried couples or groups. Now I ask you, isn't this a sad commentary? I mean, in all seriousness, my friends, isn't this a sad commentary that we feel the necessity to have to go about clarifying something that you would think is so simple, so natural? I mean, you would think that it's a no-brainer. Why in the world do you or would I think we would have to clarify the words of guys like Jefferson and Hamilton and, Webster, the dictionary guy, you know? Why would we feel the necessity of having to rewrite or edit their words for further clarification of what marriage is? It is a sad commentary, it really is, regarding the confusion that many of our people today here, especially in the West, are confused about regarding marriage. And frankly, as I said, in spite of how maybe simple it seems that some would, think this ought to be, the fact is, it's a very controversial issue. That's right, my friends. This is a very controversial issue. As a matter of fact, it's a widely controversial issue because, you see, same-sex unions and cohabitation issues are issues about economics. They're issues about the freedom of lifestyle. I mean, we're talking about here hospitalization. I mean, when you really get down to it, because people that cohabit with one another, people who are of the same gender and are living together, want to be able to be the beneficiaries of hospitalization. They want to be able to tap into the pension money of their live-in partners or their Social Security rights as partners, or perhaps be able to have estate tax protection so that when one would die, the estate of those individual or that individual could be passed down to the other without any kind of tax liability associated with it. You see, my friends, there are movements going on today that have been primarily reserved for those issues concerning marriage and exclusively reserved for those issues of marriage that now are being promoted by movements among us that at one time were considered deviant, considered aberrant, but which over time now have been incrementally being accepted as normal, you see. So consequently, the next natural move is to naturalize these relationships and allow them the afforded rights that, as I said, used to be exclusively reserved to heterosexual marital relations, to allow them also to be basically beneficiaries of those same rights. And, of course, this further will undermine and demean the value of marriage and further reduce the institution of marriage, quite frankly, to a non-essential institution. So where is all this going? Where is this leading us? I mean, doesn't marriage remind all of us of what it used to be? I mean, it used to be a place, was it not, where human beings could develop an environment of nurturing and of teaching, a time when children could rally around mom and dad and enjoy a variety of different functions and outings like camping and traveling, sports and school, and in the interaction of those events. There was opportunity for the moms and dads and brothers and sisters to develop character, to develop the kind of characteristics that were so instrumental in developing the kinds of strong, solid social skills like honesty. I mean, something as simple as that, or trust and caring, things that are developing in children or should be developing in children, like selflessness or service or learning to sacrifice, brother for sister or mom for daughter or dad for son and vice versa. I mean, these are the things, my friends, if you remember, as I remember, what marriage should be and what family should be all about. I mean, that's what marriage was it not? And the result of that, oftentimes, was the natural consequence of a strong social order, a strong society, a society that had a clear vision of its purpose and its reason for being. But today, instead, we've become confused due to a wide array of modern opinions and liberal thought and an educational system that, frankly, is quite determined in pushing the limits of the envelope. And you know what I'm talking about. Yes, that's right. People are confused. They're confused about gender. They're confused about their sexual identity. Some boys feel more comfortable in female clothes. Some women or girls feel more comfortable in male clothes. We have the attempt for many to redefine marriage and redefine family so that if, in fact, little Joey or little Susie has two mommies or two daddies, well, that's okay, and we shouldn't make fun of them, and we shouldn't be vicious or cruel. And I agree, we shouldn't in those respects. But my point that I want to make is that what was the original intent? Is that what is considered normal? Or is it a deviance, an aberration, that now is being moved toward the center and is becoming more acceptable because of sociological or sociological movements to what you would say a more liberal view, and beginning to then get off on what some of the original intents were? I mean, let's face it. I mean, when you get into really thinking same-sex unions or marriages or partnerships, however you want to characterize it, and you begin to get into the details about what it involves, and I'm not going to get too graphic, but especially in those moments of intimacy, it kind of has to almost force you, I mean, if you're like me, to begin to twist your mind. I mean, you've got to really stretch things to begin to see if, in fact, there's a normalcy here associated with that. Because quite frankly, my friends, you have to, in many respects and in many ways, think these things through and consequently find yourself really, in many cases, in a confused state as to how and why people would even find this appealing. But nevertheless, and it is unfortunate, people are confused about it. And they're confused primarily, you know why? Because they've lost sight of the original intent. That's right, the original intent. I want to go back here to the book of Genesis for a minute, back to the beginning, and I want to share with you something. Genesis chapter 1. Back here, Genesis chapter 1, and in verse 26, I want to read a scripture to you that says a whole lot without saying anything. That's right. It says a whole lot without saying anything. Follow me through this, and you'll see what I'm talking about here. In verse 26 of Genesis chapter 1, look at this now. And God said, let us make man in our image after, our image after our likeness, and let them have domination over the fish in the sea, the fowl of the air. And he goes on here in verse 27. So God, he created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female, you see. So God created male and female. He created man, mankind. That word man in the beginning there in verse 26 is indicative not necessarily of just the male portion of the human species. It's indicative of humankind. And then later on we find in verse 27 that God created him, that is, man in his own image, in both male and female versions. And look at the reason for this. Look at this now. In verse 28, and God blessed them. You see, this is the original intent. Let's go back to the beginning. That's what we're talking about here. The original intent. God blessed them, and God said unto them, listen to this now, verse 28, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, and subdue it. You see? So here, one of the very purposes of a man and a woman to get together and to form a family and enter into a covenant relationship to develop is what? To develop family and hence reproduce. Reproduce after, as God points out here, the God kind. Now, I want to show you something else here in chapter 2 because this is very interesting. And again, it says a lot without saying hardly anything. In verse 20, Adam gave names to all the cattle and all the fowl and all the beasts of the field. So here you see Adam. He's sitting there with who became later on Jesus Christ of the New Testament, the Creator God. And he's sitting there and he's naming all the animals, my friends. And at the end of the day, I don't know how many years passed by, but Adam finally got the job done. And suffice it to say, at the end of this particular day, he realized, that is, Adam realized, after looking out over all the animals, you hear what I'm saying? All the animals. He looked at dogs. He looked at cats. He looked at cows. He looked at giraffes. He looked at elephants and rhinoceroses, lions and tigers and bears, you know. I mean, Adam saw them all, and he named them all, even insects and rodents, you see. That's what your Bible says. And guess what he discovered? He discovered that none of them were his mates. In other words, animals were not for Adam to mate with. You get what I'm saying? And hence, here, what God says is, so the Lord caused a great sleep to fall under Adam. He took a rib. You know the story. Make a long story short. God created, in the Hebrew, a woman called, he called her Isha. She came from Ish. Woman is a man with a womb, for all intents and purposes. Woman. And here, therefore, verse 24, shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. And they were both naked, and the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. So here we see, and all I'm saying, my friends, all I'm saying is that for all intents and purposes, what we just read is a lot of information concerning the original intent. What am I talking about? I'm talking about heterosexual relationships. I'm talking about monogamy, not polygamy. God created only one woman and one man in the beginning, the original intent. He didn't create two men for the one woman or two women for the one man. And he didn't create Adam and Steve. He created Adam and Eve, you see, the original intent. Also, man was created to mate with another type of human species known as, in the Hebrew, Isha, you see. So here we find, and as I say, and I point out here, much of what was said without being said is established as the original premise, the original intent. Man was built and designed to procreate with a woman. If you're of the same sex, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to be cute. I'm just trying to be logical here, my friends. And let me just take the opportunity to remind you, okay? Two men can't make a baby. Two women can't make a baby. Now, we can use our techno world, you know, to do things to make babies and to afford two men or two women to have a baby. But all I'm saying is that's not what the original intent was, you see. And that's all I'm saying. The original intent here, the original definition of marriage and family is a woman and a man, monogamous, together, making babies and generating an environment of teaching and nurturing that will cause individuals, small, young, little individuals, to grow up in strong and solid families. You know, marriage, relationships, partnerships is more than just sex, my friends. You know, a pedophile who has sex with its victim or his victim or her victim is not married to that victim. An individual practicing bestiality is not married to his pet. And a heterosexual and a homosexual who are living together, cohabiting with one another, are not necessarily married with one another and are involved in a relationship that's conducive for developing good, strong, and balanced families. Now, I know I'm probably going to get a lot of hot mail on that one, and I'm sure, you know, a lot of hate mail perhaps from time to time on that one, because some of you will say, now, wait a minute, Bill, that's a broad brush. You can't say that. Well, hey, you know what? I agree. There are exceptions to every rule. But what I'm saying, and I want to get back to my original focus here, my original focus is the fact that the long and short of it is, you cannot build a strong society with good vision and solid understanding of its purpose and goals and objectives as a society when you begin to pervert the original intents that God intended to be at the basis and foundation of strong social order. And where am I coming from? Well, I'm coming from very simply, I'll use an example and a model of the Roman Empire. Many of you, if you study history to a certain extent and have dabbled perhaps a little bit in the profiling of the historical aspects of the Roman Empire, it's no secret that much of the demise of the Roman Empire, many scholars will agree, were contributed to, that is, the demise and fall of that Roman Empire, by the rise in entertainment and leisure, the rise in homosexuality, and the demise of the family. Now, these were heavy contributors, among other contributions, that dealt with the demise of the Roman Empire. But my point in all of this, and certainly the Roman Empire is a good model because there is a lot of information of tracking that particular empire and trending it to illustrate the whys and the wherefores of its final conclusion and demise. Look at over here in Psalms 128. I want to point something out here real quick before time runs away with me here. Page 728 in my Bible, I think, here. Where is it? 128, chapter 128, and in verse 1, blessed is everyone that fears the Lord, that walks in his ways. Verse 3. The wife, your wife, shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of your house. Now, the word wife is an obvious here. It means, talking from a male's point of view, a being who can bring forth children. Again, I'm not trying to be cute. I'm just trying to state a fact here. Two guys can't do that. Two ladies cannot do that. What we're talking about here is original intent. And people can twist these scriptures, and they can try to extrapolate them out of the contexts. But the fact remains, as God says here, that a wife should be as a fruitful vine by your side, and your children, look at this now, children like olive plants around your table. Amazing. And yet people will attempt to extrapolate and take liberties with these statements in your Bible, my friends, of which oftentimes are miscued and misunderstood and attempted to be used for the purpose of accommodating lifestyles that, as far as God is concerned, are less than noble by comparison to what He expects human beings to act in and behave like. Over here in Proverbs chapter 5, real quickly here. And I go ahead and I read here chapter 5, and in verse 19 it says, let her be as a loving doe and a pleasant roe. Let her breasts satisfy you at all times, and you be ravished always with her love. Now, we're not talking about sex changes here. We're talking about a female. We're talking about love. We're talking about a man who's infatuated with his wife. And God is saying to enjoy her, to basically be with her. And he goes on and he says that you be ravished always with her love. That's God's encouragement. You see, my friends, anything else is a compromise. Oh, yeah, God allows divorce. No question about it. But you know, by the same token, he states he hates divorce. God made certain allotments to accommodate man's weaknesses. And yes, the record stands true in your Bible for us to read and learn from. But the reality is the original tent, even as Jesus said in the beginning there in the New Testament where he says, you err the scriptures, when he was questioned about the divorce law, he said the original intent was not so. As far as God was concerned, divorce was not even in the vocabulary. You see, my friends, there's a lot we really need to learn about the Bible. That's why you really do need to dial 888-578-8791. Ask for the tape, Cherish Your Families. It'll be a good listen for you. It'll help you to reinstill some of the value about your families. Christian Principles of Parenting. That is also a very good read for you to learn on how to instill Christian principles and values into your children. Stay tuned, listen to these few closing comments, and we'll see you right back here next week. You know, friends, today's program was about family and marriage. And as silly as it may seem, the definition of what family and marriage is. For some today, though, it's not silly. As a matter of fact, as I mentioned in the telecast, it's a highly controversial issue today, that of defining what marriage is in our highly contemporary social system. There are many people out today attempting to redefine what marriage is and what family is. There are think tanks that are being paid large sums of money to question the status quo and attempt to look at new boundaries and new limits that will redefine what family is all about and what marriage is all about. Oh, you can best believe, my friends, they mean business. And frankly, they would like to broaden its meaning. And naturally, the result of this is just to further undermine the current value of what marriage and family really is. It's imperative that if you want to please God, that you need to come to understand what the Bible has to say about what marriage means, what fatherhood's all about, what motherhood's all about, what family is all about. It's important to God for you to understand that. That's why you need to get the material we're offering. Dial right now, 888-578-8791 or 903-939-2929. We have operators standing by. Ask for the tape, a one-hour-long tape given before a live audience called Cherish Your Families, along with the booklet that we're offering today, Christian Principles on Parenting, a good booklet that goes through a lot of details that will help you to manage your interpersonal relations with your mate and with your children. It'll give you a lot of insight. It's worth the read. Take time to do that. We'll see you right back here next week at the same time, same channel.
In times like these, we need the armor of God for the well-being of our families, to help you stand in the evil day. The Church of God International presents Armor of God, a program of biblical understanding. Armor of God and the free material offered is brought to you by the Church of God International of Tyler, Texas. You may write to us at Post Office Box 2525, Tyler, Texas 75710. Call toll-free at 1-888-578-8791 or call 1-903-939-2929 during regular business hours. You may visit our website at cgi.org or email us at armorofgod@cgi.org. We appreciate your prayers and support.